When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome one and all to the Friday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. He's Anthony Pusick. How are you?
Don, welcome back.
How did the solo show go? Thank you so much for filling in for me.
Well, they didn't shut it down. We can still do it today, so I guess,
that is
it, went,
something.
I guess it went okay.
That is something.
But I appreciate everybody's interaction and reaction to it. Seems like people enjoyed it, and if people didn't enjoy it, that's okay too. We have Don back, so that's good. But yeah, we appreciated the tweets. We had a good time.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to get to talk hockey, isn't it?
Absolutely. And then we had a beautiful NHL store show right after that. That was fantastic. Anybody who may have gone there from listening to this podcast or the K Show, thank you for that. For the starter collection, that was great. It was awesome.
So the only thing missing was you.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you. Thank you.
So last night, very interesting. So I'm scrolling through the out-of-town scoreboard as I'm flipping around the games. And I didn't get to see much of the Penguins and the Lightning. So I'm flipping around, looking at the goal scorers. Oh, looking at Sidney Crosby is 14th. O'Connor got his second. Oh, Carter for Jari. What?
Yep. Oh, yeah. That's right.
Tristan Jari with his first.
Beautiful shot, too.
Yeah, you know what? His 14th goaltender to score a goal. Now, I saw that stat. I didn't dig deeper because the previous to Ron Hextall scoring, Billy Smith was credited with a goal, but he was credited with a goal because he was the last to touch it. So I don't know if 14 is the number of credited goals to a goaltender or 14 that actually physically put it into the empty net. So I started going over in my head, okay, Brodeur, Hextall.
So it is 14 because there's been 17 goalie goals.
Right.
Brodeur's got three.
All right, so there's Hextall been 17 goalie goals.
Yes.
So it's 14 because Hextall had two. Brodeur was credited with two, but scored one into the empty net.
He has three on this. Well, listen, Wikipedia is a great source. Sauce Gardner from Yonkers.
But Brodeur with three?
It says Brodeur in the 97 playoffs.
That was against Canadians. I was at that game.
And then 99-2000 own goal?
Yeah, that was a goal that
Damon Langkow.
Because it was a game against the Lightning.
Now, the Lightning, I don't see. I see Devils, Hurricanes,
okay,
own goal, Jordan Staal in 2012. So
okay,
he's been credited with two that were own goals.
Okay. So those are what own goals mean is that it was put in by the other team, but he was the last to touch it, so he gets credit for the goal.
I forgot Linus Ullmark did it in 2022.
Ullmark did it last year.
Yep.
Osgood did it. Jose Theodore did it.
Yep.
Jari, Brodeur.
Pecorine has one. Mike Smith. Everybody remembers that.
Yeah. Good one. So it does, and I'm telling you, Igor Shesterkin will do it.
Oh, yeah. A
couple of reasons why. He's a great stick handler, and he wants to do it. Because there has to be a want to. Being at the Devil playoff game, which is interesting because I believe... Well, definitely one of Hextall's was in the playoffs, if not both. I think definitely one of them was in the playoffs. And then Brodeur's was in the playoffs in 97 against the Canadians.
Yeah,
and I was
one
there
in the playoffs for Hextall.
At the Meadowlands. And it was just unbelievable. But he was another one. Great stick handler, wanted to do it. And it's really hard to do. But these guys are such better stick handlers than they were, you know, 20, 30 years ago. Hextall and Brodeur were the standouts that were great stick handlers. These guys are all competent, athletic, and they have the want to. So Shesterkin is going to do it at some point. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you see the way that he tries and attempts to do it. I mean, I'm assuming at this point, Don, you've seen the replay. The puck gets right to Jari, and he kind of just sees the opening, and he shoots it right down, straight down the middle, and gets the goal. And seeing his teammates react is very funny. It's pretty cool.
And what's also interesting about it, and again, I don't know I'd have to go over the history. It wasn't 4-2 where you've got some margin for error. You know, that thing gets knocked down at the blue line. You're out of position. Tampa ties the game. He's a villain. So sometimes these guys don't go for it unless they're up multiple goals where they can afford to make the mistake. Like when I'm calling a goal involving Shesterkin, I'm not looking out for it as much when the goaltender's pulled and it's a one-goal lead. But when they do it with two, that's when my eye's out for it, because that's when you can kind of do it and not worry about the mistake being made. But, you know, Jari did it with only a one-goal lead, so good for him. Did you see the Hathaway hit on Luke Hughes last night?
Yes, I did.
Devils Flyers, Luke Hughes gets knocked down near the boards, ends up being a boarding penalty, 5-minute major. Hathaway gets kicked out of the game. John Tortorella goes ballistic.
As he's one to do.
I got to tell you, I don't think it's a misconduct, and you can make a case not even a penalty.
Interesting.
Now, my logic is the whoever's at fault, it's the referees for blowing the whistle late. It's an icing, but they got to play to the whistle. So let me ask you, if there's no icing on that play, is it anything? Is it a penalty? He hit him from the side. He didn't leave his feet.
Probably not.
He didn't hit him high.
You're probably
now,
right.
Hughes was awkward, but the whistle blew clearly after the hit. Matter of fact, when I'm watching it, because it wasn't like I was like fully engaged with what the announcers were saying, is that the whistle blew because it looked like Luke Hughes was hurt. The whistle blew because of the icing. But if you watch it, it was way late. So play's continuing. He hits Luke Hughes from the side. I thought it was far enough from the boards. Now maybe Hughes knew that it was an icing because he saw the official's hand up. I don't know if Hathaway saw that. But if Hathaway didn't see it and there's no whistle, why can't he hit Hughes? So
yeah,
I completely agree with John Tortorella. Now, if you want to say, what are you calling there? Again, do you see him leave his feet? Was he hit from behind? Was he hit high? So what would the penalty be? It's not interference. The puck was right there. He's eligible to be hit to me if there's no whistle. Now, if you can prove to me Hathaway knew there was going to be a whistle and knew that it was an icing, it's a different story. But I don't know that he knows it's going to be an icing if there's no whistle.
Yeah, I mean, you take a look, and you know, people made the argument that, as you said, the whistle should have been blown, but it wasn't. It's pretty bang-bang play. But obviously the reaction after. Sometimes, Don, do you feel like, and I know that they're not supposed to do that, but it feels like sometimes when you see the reaction from players or you see the hit and what it causes, that kind of leads to this type of stuff. It leads to majors. It leads to game misconducts. And yes, the refs know they wanted to blow the whistle, but they didn't blow the whistle. So that's kind of tough.
You know, the whole goal stuff with intent to blow the whistle. The fact is, you're taught to play until the whistle. Now, for people that may be new to hockey, you usually know when icing's coming because the linesman will have his arm up. There's going to be an icing. But you don't know. You know, there's going to be an icing. And sometimes there's not even like an arm up like a penalty. It's just that you'll see the linesman race towards the puck, and it's kind of an assumption. So there's usually, I take it back, there usually isn't any kind of indication from the linesman until he decides it's an icing. Now, the puck, because I don't have it in front of me. I remember seeing it earlier.
Well, they'll have their arm up, but you're not going to see that if you're going for the puck.
But the puck, it bounced off the board. Like it was way past the dots. This is not the old-time icing where you had to wait to get past the goal line or where you had to be past the goal line. They're already down there.
Have you noticed it's taking them a little bit longer to blow the whistle now?
Well,
I feel like
now,
once they got to that, I think it's the red dot, right? Once the player gets the red dot, if they beat the other player there, it should be blown. In that case, then yes, the refs did screw up. That being said, though, you screwed up, and then Hathaway hits him because he doesn't hear anything or see anybody slowing down. But again, if it's not gone at Hathaway, do you get a penalty there?
And is there a penalty if Luke Hughes springs right back up and there's no issue? But he left to go to the dressing room. Now, they reviewed it. So other eyeballs got a chance to see this. So I guess they looked at the hit being illegal, not late. Again, I didn't see major. I didn't see there being a major. And I don't know what the penalty would have been otherwise. Is it a board? Is he up against the boards? Was he hit from behind? I don't really know what was illegal about the hit other than you felt it was late after an icing call, but that gets dispelled by how late the whistle was. So, good win for the Devils. Hughes comes back, scores the game-winning goal, assisted by his brother. But that was a good game for the Flyers. But, you know, the fact that they were able to fight back, earn a point. But come on, Anthony, 47 shots on goal. I mean, the Devils are just, this is no way to live.
Well, what happened to their defense is my question, because not much has changed for this team, and if anything, you would think they've probably improved.
If you want to tell me Graves and Severson are that big of a difference, I mean, they're coached well defensively. Lindy Ruff, that was his job when he was the coach of the Rangers. He's a former defenseman.
Weren't, in my mind, wouldn't you view them more? I mean, Graves maybe not, but Severson was kind of a liability down the stretch in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't really. Now, Graves, I think, was a tough loss for
them. And Luke Hughes is an upgrade, as far as I'm concerned.
But Luke Hughes is rounding into, really a pretty solid two-way defense. I'm a little taken aback by that. Red Wings. I thought they had a spirited effort against the Rangers. They beat the Blackhawks. You got to beat the Blackhawks, right? I mean, that's just, especially in the state that they're in. We're not even going to get into that. I don't know how much you did on Corey Perry on Wednesday.
Quite a bit, actually.
What's that?
I did quite a bit, yeah. I talked about the statement. This was, of course, before Corey Perry's statement, where he also backed what GM Kyle Davidson said, that this does not involve a player or their family. But my argument was, that's fine, and of course you have every right to take your time to say what you want to say in terms of a formal statement, but when you see these rumors spiraling, you don't necessarily have to give everybody all the information. All you have to do is release a statement saying everything that is being reported about this incident is completely false, and we will give a statement at a later date. There was a 6-day window between when Corey Perry was taken off of the ice as a healthy scratch and Kyle Davidson saying that he's been waived with the intent to buy him out. And we still don't know exactly what happened. Do we have the right to is another question, like you've been talking about, Don, on the K-Show. But we could have dispelled the rumors about, as you and I know, what's been on social media a lot earlier than 6 days after.
Yeah, those are just a tough time for the Blackhawks right now, so good win for the Red Wings, and our heart goes out to Dylan Larkin, lost a child.
Yeah, that's an awful story.
Just an awful, awful story there, so thoughts and prayers go out to him and his family, so he's going to be away from the team for a little while. No word on how long he'll be out, but definitely not with the team for the foreseeable future. Bruins do what they have to do. They beat the Sharks 3-0, and the Devils are going to have to try to do the same thing tonight as they're trying to get their get a 3-game winning streak there. Great game between the Leafs and the Kraken. That's another team that's got to clean it up. I mean, the Krakens have no business throwing 40 shots on goal against anybody.
No, but, especially the way they're playing.
But you start talking about like players that sometimes get forgotten in the landscape in Toronto. Do not forget Mitch Marner. Hell of a player. Hat trick there. 4 goals on 28 shots for the Leafs in their win in the shootout over the Kraken.
I think he's their second best player.
I think you're right.
Over Nylander, in my opinion. But, I mean,
over Matthews. I love it.
You saw what EJ retweeted, his footwork on one of those goals. Just the way he skates, it's unbelievable. I mean, he's a great talent.
Islanders get a much-needed win in overtime. Barzal gets the game winner, but again, Anthony, the third period becomes a problem. Islanders go into the third with a 3-2 lead. Drury ties it 39 seconds in. Palmieri gives him a lead back on the power play, only to cough it up with 3 seconds to go in regulation on the Aho goal. So problems continue with the Islanders. Yes, they get a win, but they allowed 43 shots on goal. They only generated 16 shots. Again, outscored in the third period. It's kind of the same old for the Islanders right now. And that was a good win for a Carolina team that that needs to get straightened out as well.
Yeah, and I talked about it on Wednesday. It was a bad loss against the Devils, giving up that lead, that 2-goal lead they had in the third, and it looked like it was going to go that way again for them. It is nice to get that win, to pick up that win for them. But yeah, just a team that we've talked about a lot with this Islander team that necessarily hasn't. I mean, look, Barzal has 7 goals. I'm sure that they would have expected more from him. Just not clicking on all cylinders, especially on the defensive side, which is shocking from the Trotz era. Not a great loss for the Hurricanes, good win for the Islanders, but they're going to need a little bit more if they want to get themselves back into this race.
Yeah, for sure. And, taking a look at some of the some of the later games. Kudos to the Coyotes. Big overtime win over the Avalanche. Coyotes actually have the last wild card in the West.
Sneaky, sneaky.
I don't know how sustainable that is. There's 12 teams in the NHL playing under 500, so making the playoffs, at least this year on the surface, may not be that much heavy lifting just because there's so many teams that are losing because the league's really top-heavy right now. But you look at the Flames have kind of turned it on. The Oilers of late turned it on. That was a big win against the Winnipeg Jets. They had 39 shots on goal. The Jets have been hot. So some of these teams that we weren't, you know, that thinking about, all those outside-looking-in teams at American Thanksgiving, Oilers, Coyotes, Flames, all starting to get something going here.
Yeah, like I said, the Coyotes, you take a look at their roster. If you're not really, really into hockey, it's a bunch of guys that you may not necessarily know. Now, Nick Bjugstad had the OT goal. That's somebody, of course, that people are familiar with. Nick Schmaltz scoring a goal for Arizona last night. But yeah, I mean, they're a fun team. It's nice to see them kind of getting back into relevancy here a little bit. You don't have to look all the way at the bottom of the West to find the Coyotes. And that's a good win against an Avalanche team that may or may not be in my top five.
Yeah, we're going to have to do that in a little bit. Now, the Capitals beat the Ducks 5-4. So Washington hanging in there with the three seed in the Metropolitan Division. Now, Ovechkin's interesting. He had 2 assists. He had 5 shots on goal. He's playing well, Anthony. He's just not scoring. So I wonder how this kind of skews his ability to catch Gretzky. Seemed like a fait accompli to me. And he's playing well, and he's getting a ton of shots on goal, and he's getting assists, and I believe last I looked, he was a plus player. So he's not playing poorly, and it's but he's just not generating a lot of, was it still 5 goals I think he's stuck on? So, you know, we're looking at him being a 35-40 goal scorer, and he'd be able to get this. I don't think he's going to, you know, only score 15 goals this year, but, you know, if he might struggle to get 30, you know, now it could be interesting how long it might take him to catch Gretzky.
Yeah, I was kind of always hesitant, Don. Not that I didn't think he could do it. If he continued on the path that he was, of course, he would be able to do it. But he's getting older. This is a Capitals team that's probably going to rebuild at some point here. And if Alex Ovechkin is your only threat to be a goal scorer, it's not basketball where you could just key on somebody, but how many times are they going to let him get that power play shot? Is there going to be a season where he has an off season? Is he going to be hurt at any point in time as he gets older? And if he doesn't keep up that pace, will he catch Gretzky? You're right. He's not playing poorly. It's like, oh my God, Alex Ovechkin might not score 40 goals this year. He can end up with 30 and still have a very, very good season. But if we're talking about trying to chase 99, That's going to get tougher if he doesn't keep up the pace that he's at now, because I don't think as he gets older, it's going to get any easier.
No, it's not. So, you know, it kind of reminds me when Derek Jeter got his 3,000th hit, talking to Michael on the Michael K show.
I was at that game.
Oh, he's going to get 4,000. I'm like, well, wait a minute. You know, these guys, they just all of a sudden age sometimes, you know? And I'm not saying that that's going to happen to Ovechkin, but he might not score 40 goals every year. You know, there might be a drop off, and now he kind of adjusts things. He's 38 years old now, so I still think he's going to do it, but it might just he needs to go on a little bit of a toot here. But good win for the Capitals. I don't know if you're ready, Anthony, because this is going to be a very, very interesting top five.
Don LaGreca's Friday Top Five. Yeah! Number five.
You know, this is going to be the first appearance in the top five for this team. For
I like
me.
It. I like it.
I'm going with the Colorado Avalanche. They've caught fire, 7-2-1 in their last 10. They've been almost unstoppable at home. They're starting, even though they lost last night in overtime, they still earned a point. They're starting to find a little bit more consistency, better defensively overall as well. I've got Colorado in the top five at number five. How about you?
Yeah, I'm going to drop Vancouver down to five. 5-5 in their last 10. Obviously, their offense speaks for itself. Now with Brock Besser, I think they have 4 of the top 5 point scorers in the NHL, but this isn't in a referendum on if these guys played each other right now, where they would end up right now at 5-5 in their last 10. Vancouver has slipped a little bit, so I'm going to put them as my number five.
Number four.
Another new addition to the top five.
Okay.
Your Los Angeles Kings.
9-0 on the road, Donnie.
9-0 on the road, 7-2-1 in their last 10. They're playing some really, when you win that kind of clip on the road, I mean, listen, they're not great at home, 4-4-3, but they played very, very well. Kopitar is just having another resurgence season after rediscovering himself last year. They're a fun team to watch. I hate those silver helmets. I wish they would ban them. Same thing with the gold helmets for the Golden Knights. But I've got your Los Angeles Kings at number four.
My number four is going to be Vegas. 4-3-3 in their last 10. You guys can see where I go in terms of where I put my top five. But I didn't have the heart to maybe drop them out of the top five. I know they haven't played up to their standard as of late, but still have the most points in the National Hockey League. They've played 24 games, just as many as Vancouver. But I'm going to put Vegas at four.
Number three.
For all the same reasons, I can't drop them out, but I've got Vegas at three. Now, still in first place, still a great goal differential. Unlike last year, they're winning games at home. Remember, they couldn't win at home last year. They were great on the road, kind of like the Los Angeles Kings this year. But they've actually been slightly better at home than on the road, but still on the road, 7-3-3. So, yeah, but a little disappointed. Basically under 500 in their last 10 at 4-3-3. So I've dropped Vegas out of the top two. They're at three.
I have Colorado at three, Don. I have moved them all the way up. For everything you just said, 7-2-1, they lost to Arizona in overtime last night, but 7-2-1 in their last 10. They now have the fourth most points in the league. They're only behind Vegas and tied with Vancouver and have two more games than Vancouver and Vegas. They're playing a lot better recently. Again, a team that's 15-6-1, how bad have they played all year? But we've kind of said that they were a little disappointing early on. I think they've kind of hit their stride a little bit here. I have Colorado at number three.
Number two.
Yeah, they're starting to lose a little bit, those Boston Bruins. I got them at two. Rangers beat them. Red Wings beat them. They didn't look good against Columbus the other night. Now, they did win against San Jose, but it seems like everybody beats the Sharks. So they're starting to kind of come back down there. It's still only four regulation losses. That's why I still have them at number two. But I can't put them at number one, especially what happened against the Rangers. It was a wide-open game. They didn't play well, didn't get the goaltending, which they've gotten a tremendous goaltending this year. So a little bit down to earth for Boston. I got them at two.
Yeah, I'm in lockstep with you, Don. I feel like we have the same one, too. I actually was going to put Colorado at two, but I thought to myself, you know what? Boston doesn't deserve to fall that. Yes, exactly. Thank you, Griffin. Boston doesn't deserve to fall that far. Honestly, I know that game got out of hand late. That Rangers-Bruins game was back and forth. I feel like whoever won that game was probably going to be number one based on the way these teams have been playing. Boston 5-3-2 in their last 10. Colorado's on the doorstep, but Boston still stays at number two, which means
number one.
Yeah, I guess we can do this together because we both are going to have the same team, your New York Rangers. You can say, you know, Anthony's a Ranger fan. I work for MSG, but tell me I'm wrong. I mean, this team has played tremendous hockey, plus 18 goal differential, equal on the road to home, 7-2-0 at home, 9-2-1 on the road. You saw what they did to the Boston Bruins. Now, they had an awful game against Buffalo, losing 5-1, but that was a 2-1 game with less than 6 minutes to play. And then it kind of got out of hand from there. Clearly sleptwalked through that game, but they've got Adam Fox back. They've survived the Hedl injury. They won with the Kako being out. They'll continue to win there. Doesn't matter who's in goal for them. They win. Power play's been great. Penalty kill's getting better. Now in the top 10. They're getting production from all four lines, it seems like, almost any given night. And they just do well, 5-0 after losses. So I don't know what else you need to ask. I've got the New York Rangers at number one.
Yeah, I haven't lost back-to-back games yet this season. Now, granted, if they lost to Detroit, I probably have them I wouldn't say much lower. They're still in the top five.
Of course.
But I probably kick them down to maybe three or four. That's how, if they look the same way they did against Buffalo, and for a while there against Detroit, it may have looked that way. They may have been playing good, but they were down in that game, and eventually the breaks went the way. Ville Husso played an amazing game. Wednesday night. You were there, Don, against the Rangers. And then finally, Keandre Miller found the back of the net and then the resurgence of Jimmy Vesey into a fourth liner that has some scoring pop is unbelievable. Obviously, he started his career with the Rangers, bounced around a lot. Everyone thought he was going to be a maybe second or third line winger. He's now kind of elevated himself, or however you want to say it, transformed himself into a third or fourth line winger with some scoring pop. He's on the power play for the Rangers now. You're right. Shesterkin and Quick might be the best tandem in hockey at the moment, just with how both of them are playing. Rangers at number one, I don't think many people would argue.
Who are you taking out?
No.
But you can if you want.
Well, you can argue at Don LaGreca or at Anthony Pusick, hashtag game misconduct. Let's close it out with some tweets. Kako Costanza says, hey guys, loving having Anthony's voice in there too. Great combos. You think Hedl goes back and or comes back, goes back to the wing, or does he play the third line center, meaning they break up the current fourth line?
No.
Well, first of all, you're going to need a winger. I don't know, because Bonino's played well as the center on that third line. With Kako out, I mean, I guess there's the possibility of shuffling things around. One thing's for sure, you're not breaking up the second line.
No.
That's for sure. But what do you think of that, Anthony?
Yeah, no, we had that. I thought that conversation was going to be the one we had a couple weeks ago where we debated, does Hedl go back to second-line center? Until this roster isn't clicking the way that it is, Hedl's got to be the third-line center, and you figure it out from there, or at least on the third line. It provides depth. Cooley has kind of come into his own as more of a checking winger on that third line with a little bit of pop. I do like Bonino on that third line, but no, Hedl, I'd rather Hedl play center. That's where they're going to need him to be. If they want him to be a fixture on this team for years to come, they need him at center. Hedl will be the third line center, and they'll figure it out from there.
Adam asked about the Hathaway hit. We kind of covered that. He also says he loves Jack Hughes on the Eli Manning show. I don't know if you saw that at
yes,
all, Anthony.
Yes.
Where he was throwing the puck through the uprights, also playing the role of Peter Rosenberg by making those guys, what is O'Hara and Eli Manning, sound like old men, like what does Cap mean and all that. It was very funny stuff, so you can definitely check
show.
It out.
That's
it
a
is
good
a good show.
Show.
You should check it out on YouTube. So Sam Diaz says, gentlemen, besides acquiring a top six right winger, what other roster or line changes do you think the Rangers should consider to make their team better? And at this point in time, which goalie gives you more confidence in net? Both are great, but Quick's really killing it. Yeah, but I still have more confidence in Igor. I mean, Igor's the man.
Yeah, I mean,
nothing against Jonathan Quick, but you know, I think Quick is a really good backup, and I would feel comfortable with him if anything happened to Igor going forward. But no, Igor's the man.
I mean, people are talking short term, long term. We did this with Lundqvist and Georgiev and Talbot, and it's like, oh, you know, a 10-game stretch where I'd rather have Talbot playing the top. No, you wouldn't. I mean, yes, at the moment that they're you ride the hot goalie, I get all that. But when you're talking long term for this team, Jonathan Quick, I remember, if you remember, Don, in preseason, people wanted Jonathan Quick cut with how poorly he was playing in the preseason. So, you know, Ranger fans, you know, can have their moments where they love and hate goalies. Igor is the guy. Jonathan Quick's playing tremendous, and I hope he continues, but Igor is the guy I have more confidence in.
Now, obviously, the right wing is something they're going to have to address if Kako's going to be out for any significant amount of time. And even with Kako back, that's some more they can improve. The other thing that maybe you might like to acquire at the deadline is another defenseman. I mean, no offense to Zach Jones or Ben Harper, but you see that
Ben Harper's out long-term, Don. You see that?
Oh, I didn't see
down
that.
Down in Hartford, yeah. I think he tore his labrum.
So even more so then. I mean, Zach Jones has been fine. He filled in great for Adam Fox and playing on that third pairing and all. But you see what happened to defenseman. Lindgren always seems to get hurt because he's just a puck magnet. He's a elbow magnet. It's just, you know, you get banged up. And if you're going to make a deep run, you're going to need to have guys that are going to play minutes. You saw the amount of minutes when Adam Fox was out there. The one negative, I think, about Fox being out, even though they only lost two games while he was out, counting that last one against Buffalo, is that the significant amount of minutes in crunch time you saw Trouba have to play and Lindgren have to play, because you're not going to play Zach Jones 25 minutes. You're just not going to. So I think that acquiring like a veteran seventh defenseman that if you get into any kind of injury trouble, and especially in the playoffs, that you can rely upon a little bit more at this stage with Jones. And as you said, with Harper being out, I think that's going to be a must at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of talked about it, Don, and I wish I had you on Wednesday. Somebody asked that same question of what right wing would you acquire? And at the I had to give the honest answer of I honestly don't know who would be out there and who's available. Now, you saw that the Flames are kind of ready to get their fire sale going because Nikita Zadorov is now a Canuck. And does that open the door for somebody? But it would have to be, in my opinion, an expiring contract, a guy that's on a team-friendly deal that they'd have to move. They don't have a lot of cap space. They have some. But, you know, is a Zuccarello reunion possible? Not at the contract that he's at. Does Jesper Fast get moved by Carolina, and would Carolina move him to the Rangers? I doubt it. I don't know if the name right now is out there, and once teams start to fall out of it a little bit, maybe then you could start taking a look at who do they have, who would they trade, who would they move, but I don't know if that name in my mind right now is out there to say, yes, that's the guy you absolutely have to go get.
All right, Yankee and Penguin says, hey guys, do you think that Boston and Florida will be 1 and 2 in the Atlantic in either order when the season is over? I think I'm comfortable saying that.
I agree.
I think Detroit's played well, and I think the addition of Kane is going to help them. But I think you see the way Florida's playing right now, and I contemplated having them in my top five the way the Panthers have played as of late. So I could totally see, and I have no problem with that. I'm not angry with that thought.
No, I guess the argument is Toronto sneaks in. I think Toronto will still be the third team in the Atlantic, even if Tampa does get themselves healthy with Vasilevsky coming back. I think that they will stay at third. I don't see them leapfrogging either Boston or Florida, no.
And Alex says, what's up, guys? I have a question regarding attendance issues. Why do you think a fan base like Winnipeg is going through such an attendance lull? Is this proof that these small market Canadian teams with dedicated fan bases are not suitable for a franchise? Listen, they sold out season tickets when they announced the franchise like in 10 minutes. I mean, they have support. It's just that the economy, they have been kind of stuck in the mud over the last few years. And I had mentioned this to EJ Anthony earlier in the season when I asked him about the question about the attendance thing is that they didn't sign Scheifele or Hellebuck until basically a week before the season started.
Yep, they thought they were going to be gone.
So everybody thought that they were. It was a fire sale. Laine's gone. Dubois gone. They were getting rid of players, and it looked like Scheifele and Hellebuck were out the door. And the fan, and I really believe tickets are bought in the off season. Not a lot of walk up. They got off to a bit of a slow start. Scheifele and Hellebuck signed late. I think you can start the attendance grow if this team continues to play well. But you've seen post-COVID some of these smaller market teams like Winnipeg, Buffalo, be affected. These are hard-working towns. There's not a lot of millionaires. There's not a lot of corporate sponsors that can kind of fill up the building the way they can in New York and Philadelphia, Boston, Detroit. So maybe that speaks to your point about how difficult it is for some of these smaller markets to hold on to franchises. But as long as you know the interest is there, everything should just be fine. So I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Yeah, I mean, I always have a problem with bringing a team back to a market where they had to leave because they didn't think it was going to work. And that's not a knock on the Winnipeg fans. I think Winnipeg fans are great. You saw those whiteouts the first time they made the playoffs when they were back. That's a passionate fan base, a passionate group of people up in Canada that love hockey. It's great, but, you know, there was a reason that they left, and you hope that if there are some down years, that it doesn't reach that point again. And that's the problem, as you said, down with a small market. But look, like you said, they didn't know what the team was going to be a week before the season. They're third in the Central right now. I can't imagine that place is going to be half empty come January, February, if they're fighting for like one of the top spots in the West.
Well, I think that, you know, the reason that Winnipeg and Quebec City left when they did is because there was no salary cap and big market teams were gobbling up all the free agents. We have seen Winnipeg be active, not as active as some of the bigger markets in free agency. It's a tough place. I mean, Edmonton goes through it too. It's not a big city. It's a cold weather city and all that. But I think they deserve a franchise, and the fans will be back, especially if they continue to play the way they're playing. And we'll be back, Anthony. We got EJ on Monday. What?
Don.
Yes.
What do you think of the Rangers alternate jersey?
I like it. Well, I'll say this. I don't love it.
That's fine.
The million stripe thing, I'm not on board with that.
See, I like that.
But that logo's cool. I don't mind. It's way better than the Liberty jerseys.
That's right.
So I like it. Now,
There could have been a logo of a cat.
Right.
And as long as it wasn't the Liberty, I would have probably been happy.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Liberty jerseys either, but I do like the jersey. I like the color scheme. Again, I'm not in love with all the million stripes.
Does it change your opinion? Because I believe I saw this on the Rangers X account, that the reason the stripes are like that is because it's supposed to kind of showcase or make it seem like the outside garden lights when they play.
Really?
That's I have to go look, because I could have swore I saw it and then it disappeared on me. But I think that the reason for putting it that way was to mirror the outside garden lights.
Well, I mean, there's always logic to that.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm going to tell you a little secret.
You're good.
Why is his first name escaping me? McFarlane, the one that made those the hockey action figures, and well, all sports, but I got a bunch of but I can't. He was part owner of the Edmonton Oilers.
Okay.
And we had him on a show I did on ESPN back when there was the ESPN store. And remember when the Oilers had those gear jerseys?
Yes. Yes, I do.
All right. And I did not like them. Nobody liked them.
No, I agree.
But there was like four gears, and the four gears were supposed to there were five gears, and the five gears were supposed to represent the five Stanley Cups. And like, he gave all of this conversation about how all of these things with the gear represented something about the franchise's history. And that you should like it for that reason.
You should like it.
And then off the air, and I hope I'm not telling any secrets out of school. He told me, like,
we're all friends here.
I made that up. I just said that because people were upset about the jersey. So I think this might be made up too. Like, you know, it's supposed to resemble the lights outside the garden. Yeah. No, just
so here's the graphic, Don. If you care. The set sleeves and socks are made of a unique yarn dye material to ensure premium finish and to emulate the garden's lights, streaking traffic, and the hustle of our city. So I guess like when you see on MSG when they do those time lapses and it looks like things are going 100 miles an hour.
Again, I don't hate it. I just don't love it.
I'm just trying to help you out.
But I do like bringing that logo back. They had it for a year when Ferguson was the general manager. He actually took it with him to Winnipeg.
Oh, they got the blue shirt subway tile design on the inside of the neck. That's cool. I like where Penn Station, it has like Penn. That's kind of cool.
So that's, we have that. So I'm glad we were able to get that out of the way. So check that out. I'm not a huge fan of a lot of the third jerseys, but no, I saw it and I like it. I don't love it, but I like it. And if anything that's not the Liberty, then I'm ecstatic about it. But EJ Monday, Anthony, have a great weekend.
I'm thrilled to end on that note.
Want to get in touch with us at Don LaGreca, at Anthony Pusick, hashtag Game Misconduct. We'll talk to you again on Monday. This was the Friday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.